All right, now I get to a fun chapter. Chapter 11. Chapter 11 really stands alone. It does fall under this concept of inquiry from the Corinthians. They wrote him an epistle that started in chapter 7 concerning the things that you have written to me. Chapter 11 falls within that, but it kind of stands alone. There are some similarities between chapter 11 and 12 because of the division that is mentioned and their taking of the Lord's Supper. And chapter 12 is really about don't be divided, but be unified. You're one body. Don't let those spiritual gifts divide you. But really, it stands alone. Chapter 12, 13, and 14 are a section of spiritual gifts, kind of like the three chapters we just went through were about eating meat offered to idols. Chapter 12, 13, and 14 concern spiritual gifts. But in chapter 11, there is what I believe a context in verses 1 through 16 that concerns specifically some regulations with regard to the use of spiritual gifts. And those first 16 verses are pretty disputed as to what it means, what the application is, and whatnot. And it's not something, of course, I would be dogmatic on. The explanation I'll give you is simply through my study and what seems most logical and clear to me. And so if you have a different view with regard to it or whatever, there's no big deal. This is just how I'm going about it. So verses 1 through 16, you might remember this context has to do with head coverings. And it's really in general, and this is the general application that we can make. There are several, I guess, but this is really what Paul's hitting home with. And it has to do with the tiers of authority, if you will, and really the role of men and women. I don't think in the assembly, but as Christians, as people. And it has to do with the authority of God, Christ, man, and woman. And it's in that order that he mentions. And so it has to do with that. I think it falls under this concept of spiritual gifts, and we'll get to that explanation in a minute, and I think you'll see it if I do a good job explaining it. But there are really three views, and we're not going to get into the verse-by-verse exegesis yet because I just want to set the foundation of this. There are three views in verses 2 through 16 of chapter 11. The first one could be that the Apostle Paul is discussing a matter that was simply a matter of culture, of that time and that place. Head coverings were a matter of the culture of that time, so it doesn't apply to us because it was their culture and we don't have that culture of wearing head coverings. That's one view, and that is a popular view. There is one that is less popular and less held, and that is that it's a concept of a general spiritual principle that is even bound today. So there are individuals who go too far and they bind it on other people and condemn other people for it, and we'll talk about why that shouldn't be the case. There's not enough evidence to their point, and I think that it's actually something that can be completely refuted, although if it's a pang of conscience like we just talked about in chapter 8, 9, and 10, and they think they should wear a head covering, they better do it or else they'll be sinning when they wound their conscience. But some think it should be bound and every woman should be wearing a head covering in the assembly. And some women, because of it being a matter of conscience, they do it anyway and they don't bind it on other people. And every once in a while, you'll go in places and see that. There are areas, of course, in this country that have it a lot more than around here, and I didn't see much when I was in Texas or Louisiana either. So, now the third one is the one that I hold to, and that makes most sense to me. I think there's less difficulties within this interpretation than there are the other two, and that's that this is a specific regulation concerning the use of spiritual gifts, and it's not a matter of being inside the assembly using them, and we'll talk about that in a second, but simply when women use spiritual gifts during this time, this was a regulation that they had to follow, they had to submit to as a sign of authority on their head so that it didn't seem like they were usurping authority or getting out of place, so that it was obvious they were doing this in a submissive role. And that's the one I think that makes most sense, and I'll explain that. So the first one, that it's just a matter of the culture of the time, this specific area. This falls under this understanding of verse 16, which says, if anyone seems to be contentious, we have no such custom, nor do the churches of God. So some take that to mean we have no such custom, as in we as Christians, or Paul writing this as an apostle, it's not a divine custom. This is not a tradition which you have received from us, which God gave to us. It's not something you have to do. The church has no such custom delivered from God. And so it's simply a custom of the times, and you don't have to worry about it. But that would mean the contentious individual is one who is not wanting to conform to the customs of that time. And the individual who holds this view of verses 2 through 16 suggests that Paul is making the point that there are customs within your culture that most adhere to, and so you don't stick out like a sore thumb, and you're not a contentious person, and you're not fomenting strife. You conform to that so long as you can be subject to God's will. So in our day and age, it's less so nowadays, but a man walks into a building, he takes off his hat. There's nothing inherently sinful with walking in a building and keeping your hat on, but if you are in that area or now that time frame where it would be something that is offensive for a man to walk into a building and keep his hat on, then a Christian would need to, so as not cause any contention or strife or anything, or bring any unnecessary attention upon himself, take that hat off. And there are several that we could go through. So he would be saying, don't be contentious about this. You're expected as a Christian to fall in line with the culture that you live in, with all its customs, as long as those customs don't keep you from serving God or are inherently sinful. And that would be an expectation. I think that's a legitimate spiritual point, but I don't think it's made in this place for this simple reason. He says, don't be contentious, but the church of God doesn't have any custom anyway. So he's basically saying, don't be contentious, but you're right. You know, you're making a big deal out of it. I don't have to do this. It's just a cultural thing. I don't want to do this. I don't want to fall in line with culture. Don't do that. You shouldn't be doing that. Fall in line with the culture as much as you can. But you're right. We don't have a custom. And that'd be kind of contradictory. He's basically saying, don't do it. You're doing wrong by doing that. But you're right. It's all right that you're not doing it. And that doesn't make any sense to me. I don't think that's the case. Now you got the concept of it being a spiritual requirement. And it's bound today by some, meaning if you're a woman and you're in the worship assembly, you need to wear a head covering. So what it assumes is that we're in the worship assembly, and verses 2 through 16 of 1 Corinthians 11 has to do with the worship assembly. But notice the situation in verse 4. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head. Every woman who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head, for that is one and the same if her head were shaved. So it's praying and prophesying. And he's saying you're doing this in the assembly, and when you're in the assembly, all women are to wear head coverings because this is a general spiritual requirement that is even supposed to be bound today. But what are women not to do in the worship assembly? Speak, right? Where do we find that? The 14th chapter, right? Verse 34, let your women keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak. They are to be submissive, as the law also says. If they want to learn something, let them ask their own husbands at home, for it is shameful for women to speak in the church. In 1 Timothy chapter 2, he kind of talks about the same thing, but he gives a little more of an explanation. 1 Timothy 2 and verse 11, let a woman learn in silence with all submission. I do not permit a woman to teach or have authority over a man, but to be in silence. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression. Nevertheless, you will be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith, love, and holiness with self-control. And he mentions that order of creation in chapter 11, that man was formed first. And why was woman formed? What purpose did God make woman out of man? To be a helpmeet. So woman was for man. There's that authority. And we'll note later on in chapter 11 that that doesn't mean that a man is transcendent compared to a woman. Spiritually, in the Lord, they're equals. But with regard to the roles physically in the order of creation, there is subjection there. So it can't be with regard to a worship assembly, because women are to keep silent in the church. And Paul's not going to contradict himself there. So there are two possible explanations that they'll give. It must be an exception that Paul hasn't mentioned, just implied here that there's an exception, that if you are using spiritual gifts, a woman who has spiritual gifts can use those in the assembly. I think that's presumptuous to just assume this, because it wasn't a matter of, are you inspired? Is it a spiritual gift? Or are you just a regular old person without any spiritual gifts? It was a matter of Adam being formed first, then Eve. Eve being deceived, not Adam. And so you got those understandings. It's not a matter of, are you inspired or not? It's a matter of creation, the order of creation and authority. And so at best, that's just presumptuous, and that's certainly not something we should do. And in consequence, if it is a matter of spiritual gifts, that's an exception, then that's a moot point, because do we have spiritual gifts today? No, so this wouldn't even apply to us if it's spiritual gifts. So there's one other explanation they might give, and that it's not limited to spiritual gifts. Prayer does not necessarily mean inspired prayer, it's just prayer, which I don't think that's the indication here. But then it would still be an assembly, and based on what we just said, it would be wrong for them to speak in the assembly. So that's why I think that's obviously not right, that it was a spiritual requirement even for today. What I do think is that as you have praying and prophesying together, just like knowledge is paired with prophecy in chapter 13, that prayer is a spiritual gift. And these were simply regulations for the use of spiritual gifts, not in the assembly, because women are to keep silent in the assembly, but when they use their spiritual gifts outside of the assembly as a matter of a symbol of authority, so that people know they're not usurping authority, they're not getting out of their place of subjection, so everyone knows they're doing this in a humble position, remaining subject in the order God created them, that they were a symbol of authority. And that was something that Paul is requiring at this time, which, of course, in and of itself specifically doesn't apply today, because there are no spiritual gifts. And we've run out of time, I think. So I'll elaborate on that last point next time, and then we'll get into the specific verse-by-verse study of it. So 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 2 is where we'll be next time.